Podcast. I'm Allison Little, a best-selling author, keynote speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur who has built businesses and brands for the past decade. I'm passionate about helping high achievers launch to the next level.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Launch Podcast with Allison Little. Today's episode is called Find Your Why with Nicole Smithback. Nicole is in healthcare administration, and she's been doing that for about 16 years in various settings. She holds a master's degree in business administration and has a passion for helping to coach, train, and develop others on finding their why and connecting to that vision in all they do. I am so excited to have Nicole. Nicole and I have been planning this podcast episode for so long, and now we're finally connecting. I'm so excited to have her. I know she's going to share some personal things and some professional things that are really going to help you launch in your life. So hello, Nicole. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Allison. I'm excited to be with you.
Absolutely. This is amazing. And I know we're going to have a great conversation. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. So you hit it right on. We've been chatting now for, I think, almost a year, actually trying to connect. And I'm actually from central Wisconsin, like you. And so our paths just connected. In full disclosure, if I can, you know, your experiences too, is just, I stumbled across some of your podcasts and just really connected with you and your values and mission and what you bring to the table as a leader. So thank you again for having me. I have, as you said, been a healthcare administrator for, actually it's been about 18 years in various roles, from operations to inpatient, outpatient, ambulatory surgery centers. And now specifically actually working with private practice veterinary hospitals, so large emergency 24-hour specialty veterinary hospitals in the same context. So very wide breadth of administration and leadership and coaching development. So
awesome. Wonderful. And you have a kid. How old is your child?
I do. Yeah. Sorry. I have a 9-year-old. So I'm married and live down in the Madison, Wisconsin area now, and married with a 9-year-old, soon to be 10-year-old little girl.
And we connected with that because I have a 9-year-old, almost 10-year-old, and they're just so sweet. I have a 6-year-old too, but that age range, we were just talking about that as moms before we got started, is just how sweet and kind they are and how much,
yes, you
know, how much they learn and just their personalities. So yeah, I love that.
They're fun. I just got invited to start coaching her basketball team, or helping with that. So that'll be fun rolling in. And again, I think all of us coming off of, well, we're still in the middle of the pandemic, of course, but trying to find safe ways to be able to get them in the gym and keep them active and healthy is something I'm excited to be able to watch her do with the last year and a half that our family has had, specifically in addition to COVID. It'll be really exciting again to have some sense of normalcy come back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. Wonderful. Well, Nicole, you know, when we first started kind of chatting, you shared a personal story that had happened to you. And I just was like, oh my gosh. So help kind of catch our listeners up on kind of what the last few years have looked like for you and your family.
So we, I'll go back, and I think everyone's world stopped in 2020 when the pandemic occurred, as did ours. And we all in Wisconsin, where you and I both are, everything really hunkered down around March of 2020, and then kind of started around mid-May to lighten up, where you were able to start to go back out and maybe try and do some things, specifically if they were outdoor. Mm-hmm. And so my husband had decided that it would, you know, be a good time to do a weekend away. And he was gone with some friends. And I got a call on that Friday evening. My daughter was actually lying in bed snuggled with me as we talk about her. We do movie nights when daddy's gone. And I thought the phone ringing at around 10:55 was going to be friends being funny when I saw who was calling. And I think, I know you've experienced trauma as well with your, I believe, your mom and family. When you get that call, that you realize in that moment that this is actually the moment your life became a before and an after. And that moment for me was 10:55 p.m. on May 29th, 2020. And my husband had experienced a fall, was completely unresponsive, and was being med-flighted to UW-Madison. We're very fortunate that we have a level one trauma center in our pocket. And I actually was at the hospital before he was able to arrive via med flight. He was admitted as a John Doe because he was unresponsive. Thankfully for us, everyone did everything right for a period of 72 hours. And as a practice administrator and a spouse, my worlds collided. And I truly do think that my entire career built me for what was about to happen. And so head trauma can be several different things. In his world, it resulted in hemorrhaging and a stroke, okay, which on paper, he was not responding. So there's different levels of consciousness that we, in the medical field, establish for you and I right now. Are a Glasgow coma scale is what it's referred to as a 15, meaning we're chatting, we're alert, we're able to respond to visual cues, physical cues. He was a 3, which is the lowest that you are, and typically you're in a vegetative state. And so we were met with a social worker in the hospital, and he was unresponsive and in a coma, and we didn't know why. And you know, imaging wasn't showing a very obvious clinical diagnostic of why he was unresponsive. And what we know was that he just took a delay in his hemorrhaging, in his brain activity. And so he ended up resulting about 36 hours later from the accident, being rushed into emergency surgery from the stroke and a hemorrhage, to which he had his right temporal lobe removed, or a portion of his right temporal lobe had to be removed because it was so damaged. And he had to have a cranioplasty, which is the process of removing a portion of your skull. And he was actually swollen. His brain was swollen outside of his skull. And so he stayed that way for about 4 months. And in August, was healthy enough. Obviously, I'm skipping a lot of details, but in August, he was healthy enough to trial put his bone back into his skull. And he did miraculous. And he went back to work 4 weeks after that and has been amazingly doing spectacular.
So this is a story. I truly believe in anybody who's listened to this podcast or has ever met me knows that I believe in miracles. And what you're telling me right now is that this is a miracle story for your family.
100%. I still look at him, and it's funny to say that I'm grateful that he has this 22-inch scar on his head, but he, by all accounts, is doing so great that, you know, there are things that still come, of course, after what he's been through. But, you know, it's a way for him, I think, to validate to himself that if he touches his head, you know, it's like, oh, wait, no wonder I'm tired or I'm this or the other. As you think of what his body has done, and you think of the miraculous things the human body is capable of, and having a portion of his temporal lobe removed, and he's walking, talking, driving, and fully participating in our lives is an absolute miracle. And his neurosurge team is just, again, we had a combination, I like to say, of the perfect recipe of a lot of love, an incredible fight and grit on his side, a wonderful medical team, as I said earlier, in our pocket, and miracle and or luck, whichever one you want to take. But we had the perfect alignment. We're really, really grateful.
That's so beautiful. And I love that you're telling me this now, and it's that miracle story. And I know you learned so much probably through that process. And as you're just sharing that story, I can just see the emotion for the people that are listening to this podcast. You probably can't see it. Eventually, this will be a video that I'm going to share, obviously, with others, but you can't see the emotion in her eyes and the strength that's taking and the courage it's taking for her to share this story, because this is something that her family went through that completely changed and altered what life looked like, right? What life looked like and felt like for them, and that safety and that security and all of the things that go along with what you're going through in life. And especially when you have children and all the different things, right? This shook your world, essentially. And I just wanted to kind of illustrate that for our listeners. So I thank you for being brave and vulnerable and sharing that with us, because, you know, I don't know who's listening to this podcast episode who perhaps had some sort of traumatic event, right, that they had to go through, or an accident that left them in a place where maybe they didn't have hope. So I'd love for you to kind of talk about what was the thing that helped you hold on to hope through that process of feeling so scared and feeling so vulnerable and not knowing what it was going to turn out to be like?
I think there were two major things that now that I'm able to reflect, it's been about a year and a half. And so one, it became very crystal clear to me that time after time, the doctors and the surgery team would come in and share what the prognosis was. And then at one point, I remember specifically sitting with his social worker, and of course, they were appropriately guarding me for talking about, do we have stairs in our home? Where would he sleep if he were in an assisted living? Would he come home? And at the same time, I could see him in his hospital room. And this was, again, during the pandemic, so nobody was able to be with him but me. And I'm so grateful for that. But I could see him through the window of his hospital room trying to use his hand that at the time he could not move it very easily. And he was trying to cut meatloaf. And I'll never forget it. And I just remember in that moment, our family motto has kind of always been, you'll hear me jokingly say GGR. I have it on three bracelets right here, which is grace, grit, and resilience. And I said to his caseworker, I said, I hear you and I absolutely have to align with this, but I'm watching this kid that I've loved since I was 19 and he's trying to cut his meatloaf and you're telling me that he's never going to be able to walk upstairs. And again, because of my role in professional, you know, I know that they have to tell me the what could happen. But if I gave up on him, what was I fighting for? You know, so we really just stuck to focusing on the next right thing, focusing on what is in our control and what isn't. And I just followed his lead. And it's funny because I think in our normal day to day, I'm definitely the stronger personality, the more like we got to do this, you know, I'm very action oriented, very on the move constantly. And he's the contentness to me. And he's my calm, I'm the storm, I think is probably very fair. And again, once he was able to communicate with me was one of the most spectacular moments. And as a mom, not to pull on our heartstrings, really strong, but you think of your child losing their childhood in that moment. And obviously I get emotional because now a year and a half later, she can be a 9-year-old again. And, you know, like,
to all of our listeners, we went deep quickly, my friends.
We did go deep quickly.
Crying right now in this moment, just like feeling the beautiful reality that is your life right now, that your child gets to be a 9-year-old again. Like, it is so simple, right? It seems so simple, but it's
so simple
and beautiful. And like you were talking to me about how she gets to play basketball and you were giddy excited, right?
Absolutely.
Giddy excited.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, my dear friends who are listening to this, get giddy excited about the simple things because, when hard things happen, it makes everything else a little bit more beautiful. And a lot of times people will be like, Allison, you seem happy all the time. No, I see the little things are so profound because I've gone through so many hard things, just like Nicole. And so like the sun shining right now makes my heart explode with joy, hugging my kid. They're all, I mean, little things, a call from your spouse. Enjoy
Absolutely.
That. Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, give yourself, and I love that idea of the grace, grit, and resilience. Grace, grit.
Yes.
Wow. What a beautiful motto for your family. And I like that you have a motto for your family, right?
We do.
You know, I mean, how many families go about their lives and they're all going separate directions, but here you've taken the time and energy to say, what is our family motto going to be? And it's the thing that got you through probably one of the most difficult.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, isn't that awesome how that aligned? How at some point you two had a conversation and you came up with this, or you three came up with this idea. And then when you were faced with one of the biggest challenges, you said, okay, here's what it's going to look like. And then on top of that, the other thing you said, Nicole, is you said, we just did the next right thing. So talk about that, the next right thing, because, you know, I don't know who's listening, who might be going through something really challenging or difficult. It could be a diagnosis of cancer. It could be they just lost a significant other. It could be an accident, right? Mm-hmm. So what does the next right thing look and feel like for you so that we can help that person who may be going through that challenge right now?
Sure. I think it stems from, I've been in operations my whole career. And so if you're any of your listeners grew up operationally, you can't control anything. And so we can put all these workflows in place and we can build and design algorithms that look great. And then there's real application. And so whether it's coaching my teams and or my leaders, you know, you really have to forgive yourself and give yourself the space to recognize what is within my control right now at this time, which is 12:22. I know what I think is going to happen for the rest of my afternoon, but the truth is I don't know that. And that was really our family thought, was breaking it down into small steps. Again, big goals are really, really beneficial, an absolute requirement, you know, I think for us progressing in what your goals are in your life, personally or professionally. But when you can break it down to what is the next thing within my control that I can impact either myself or my needs or my teams. And that was really all we focused on. And so having it in that personal link again around his accident stemmed to, okay, I couldn't control in this moment, for example, that he was unresponsive, but I could control how I could communicate to those who wanted to love us through this, who couldn't during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. They couldn't come there. And so an example of that was knowing I'm very, very fortunate that I love and care so much. And I'm very, very close with my sister and mother-in-law, and knowing I can't imagine what it would feel like as a mom to not be there when I got that call about my child. Mm-hmm. And so I made the decision at the next right thing in that control at 4 a.m. The accident didn't occur at that time, but we didn't know any answers. And I knew she couldn't come. And I knew I was going to need her later. And so I made the decision not to call her. Why wake her up in the middle of the night at this point? She wouldn't have been able to come anyways. And so, you know, I made that collective decision, which I hope a year and a half later, she understands. I know she does, thankfully. You know, but so you think of recognizing in that moment of making a decision, how does it impact others? And what is your why? And why did you make that call? And I think that those two align of what is the next right thing and how does it matter? And that's just a great example, I think, of why did I make the decision to wait a little bit so she could get some sleep when I knew we were going to need her for the long haul. And so again, on an emotional side, that's a call you'll never forget making, but she was able at least to get some good night's sleep and then be there for me at 6 a.m. when I needed someone to help, you know. And I think just breaking it down into small steps, as I digress a little bit, is, you know, just knowing that you can't control everything. And once you can find peace to let that go and control what you can in your small bubble, it relieves some of that stress or pressure that you've probably put on yourself. And I think you've probably learned that not many people put the same amount of pressure on you as you put on yourself. And that's my takeaway for that.
That's awesome and super helpful. So through this accident, I know that one of the things that emerged that was really a lesson for you and for your family was really kind of figuring out and finding your why. So let's talk a little bit more about really how that emerged.
And while the accident, I think, enhanced the find your why goals for me, really, I do think my career started that. And so again, I've done coaching and developing, whether it was for physicians, advanced practice providers, nursing staff. It's hard. It was hard before the pandemic for all my healthcare team members out there. I hear you and you are seen every day. But remembering all of us go into the help career field, whatever that is, because you care and you want to help people. But to not acknowledge that that is heavy work is really difficult. And I don't think it's healthy, in my opinion, to not acknowledge how hard the work we do to be helpers. Mm-hmm. And so that foundation was already there. And when my personal life collided, it was very apparent in many roles. The care that we received was spectacular, top of the line at every single interaction. Those people matter. Your words matter. And connecting that, whether you're in customer service, whether you're in healthcare, which obviously can be linked to customer service, you've got to find your why to do the heavy lifting that you do every day. And linking that, I think, is empowering for you when you're able to realize pulling off, whether it's hosting a conference or a podcast, or you know, it's not light. It's a lot of work. But the passion you find when you know you've impacted somebody, or you've made a difference in their healthcare, or you've sent their pet home, whatever your career field is, you can't lose that sight by a task list.
I love that. Just let's talk about that a little bit, because I think what you just said is so profound, and each of us needs to find our own unique why, right? There's some reason why you're constantly showing up, and you never know what that thing that you're doing is going, how that's going to help somebody. But if you can show up, I remember when I started writing books, my one why was I was going to help one person. Every single time I step on a stage or I do a podcast episode, I'm always thinking there is one person that's going to listen to this episode that's in the place of their life where they need to hear this message. They need to hear what Nicole went through and her lessons, and they need to link that to where they are in their life, and that will help them in some way, shape, or form, right? And so if we can all take a moment to kind of recognize what that looks like in our career, and also recognize if, you know what, I don't have a why anymore, which means that maybe you need to make that pivot or change, or be okay with stepping outside of your comfort zone and trying something new, right? Because that's okay. As we grow, as we evolve, we will get a different why. We will move to that next place of our career or of our life, right? Is that what you found too, Nicole?
Absolutely. And you said my year. So I have two. I don't do New Year's resolutions, but I do a word of the year and a note of the year. And so pivot was my word of the year this year. And you hit it right on it for me, Allison, anyways, as I resonate with you on, it doesn't mean that what you were doing isn't purposeful and impactful, but maybe you need to pivot to feed yourself so you can feed others. It's the oxygen on the plane, right? And again, it doesn't matter what your role is in identifying your one why is, if one person is impacted, or I make one person remember that what they do matters and they're heard. Even in when I was a frontline manager, I get excited about having that connection, or when someone just says, thank you for hearing me. To me, that's the biggest compliment I can get from a team member, is they acknowledge that my intent is to hear them, and I can't fix everything. Again, the work we do is really, really hard. And for some people, it's not the right alignment. And then they need to make that pivot decision for themselves.
Absolutely. And that's so powerful. Well, Nicole, we're going to shift gears a bit. I ask everyone, what are the two things they've done in their life to launch to the next level? And so I need to ask you as well, what are the two things you've done?
Two things. You asked me to think about this. So number one is get a mentor. Absolutely get a mentor. Find somebody who's doing what you want to do and follow them, listen to them, reach out and advocate to them that you admire them and why you want them to be your mentor. Because again, you don't have to do it alone, can you? In some cases, but you don't have to. So why? And then the second one is, for me, I think, to take a step aside. And I don't necessarily mean a step backwards. Those are two very different things in your career or in your professional world. But being humble and graceful enough to step aside to allow your gifts to come forward was really, really beneficial to me earlier in my career.
That's interesting. I like that. So allowing your gifts to lead you. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So stepping aside to let your gifts show through. Share a little bit more about that for our listeners.
So I think so many times or my teams that I've coached and led, we have this perceived notion of what our either job description or what our expertise is. We don't necessarily let our natural gift come through. And for me, that natural gift is being the calm when everybody else is going to lose it. And I know that. I knew that very early about myself, that I had an ability to problem solve through things. Don't get me wrong. I'm human like everyone else, and I may call my mama and lose it and, you know, have that safe space. But recognizing and offering that gift to others, so they knew that about me as soon as they met me, to say, you know, hey guys, my job, not just my job description, but my job is to let you know I'm here for you. I'm going to push you to think outside the box, But I certainly, if I'm going to push you off a dock, my crew would laugh at me right now if they could hear me. I would tell them is right. My job is to have them trust me enough to jump off the dock. But they also know that I'm going to come in with my dinghy and my life jacket to save them when they tell me they can't swim. It's try anything once and hear them and know that, again, we can always fix it. And, you know, in most cases, nothing is final. And so be human, give yourself the space to lead and go forward with what you know excites you. And don't let your position or your job description hold you back from that. And I think a lot of us do, myself included, is, oh, that's not in my job role, or that's not my title. And so when you're hungry to give those gifts to others and you can acknowledge them right away, just like if you're humble enough to be able to acknowledge maybe your downfalls as well, you remove the power from somebody else being able to label you in a professional setting. And so whether that's talking my team through recognizing your physiological response when you're really frustrated, and I usually will ask them, hey, Allison, is it okay if I share right now what my perception of interacting with you is? Mm-hmm. And when you ask them that, again, you're asking to invade their space, right? Their mental space, their physical, their comfort level. Again, as leaders, we have to be humble enough to remember that that's a gift.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's so helpful for us to reflect on in our own lives. One other question that I wanted to ask you, Nicole, just because I'm kind of curious, is what's your favorite
book? My favorite book?
Yes.
Oh, that's a great question. I think right now it honestly is, if my crew again knows me, it's like on Cocktail, right? Isn't it Cocktail where Tom Cruise always has a book under his desk?
Right.
It's this wonderful, Oops, I Became a Manager, which actually is a lot of things that are very, very, it's by Amy Newfield, I should say. And she's a veterinary technician. And it's a little bit more focused on a frontline manager. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading it as a book club with my directors and managers at our team that I have them do. So we bought it for everybody. But in her case, she was a frontline team member who kind of fell into every job she had. And so she felt like she didn't have a lot of resources. And so one of the most insightful things that she talks about in it, though, is the unicorns in your life. And I want to steal that from her some days. And I talk about it all the time, but how there are just some people who are inherent day makers. You can't always train it. You can't even always pick it. I think usually you know a day maker when you meet them, but is striving to be the unicorn in someone's life, I thought was a fantastic approach. And that's why right now, Oops, I Became a Manager, a great read for frontline team members and really experienced team members to talk about be the unicorn in somebody else's world.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Unicorn talk. I love that. I have so many unicorn conversations with people.
Right?
I'm so glad you brought that up, right? I have a friend who's just like obsessed with unicorns. We talk about unicorns. So awesome. Wonderful. I'll have to check that out. Well, I am so excited about everything that you shared. I'm so grateful that your husband is doing better. It was a beautiful miracle. So happy for your family. Like that is, it just makes my heart happy. I'm sure everybody that's listening, Nicole, it feels for your family and is so excited that you're on the upswing and everything is going in the right direction. We'll continue to send those positive vibes to you. How do people get a hold of you, Nicole?
Absolutely. So my primary communication is probably on LinkedIn and we can share that. And then NicoleSmithBeck.com, which is actually down at the moment. We had a lovely hack event, but otherwise hit me up at NicoleSmithBeck.com or on LinkedIn.
Lovely. That is awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nicole. And thank you to our listeners for listening in. I know that this was an emotional episode.
I don't normally get emotional.
Beautiful. It was beautiful. And it was so heartfelt. And I'm so grateful for you to be so vulnerable and be so open because, like I said, we just never know. We never know who that message is for, and we don't know how it's going to help them necessarily, but we hope that it helps serve you. And I ask all our listeners to share our episode, share something that you got from it with your team, with colleagues, with friends, with family, because you don't know where somebody is in their lives and how it might help them, right? This is why we spread positive messages like this out into the world, because, you know, as we do more and more of this, we just never know how it's going to help people. And that's our goal. So thanks again and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Launch Podcast. I'm Allison Little, and I'm so excited that you spent your time with me. Look for future episodes and connect with me on social media or at my website at www.allisonlittle.com.